Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 25th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle used gadgets lying around your home or office. For a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets, go to gazelle.com, bonus code TNT, and by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check them out at a Best Buy near you or visit slingbox.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Becky Worley.
Behind the board is our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
You ready for some tech news?
Let's do it.
Google is confirming voice calling for Gmail.
Yeah, making phone calls right out of your email client on your computer.
Phone calls coming right out of your email client. So this is a combination of Google Voice, right, being rolled into Gmail. So when you're in that chat area, is that where it comes from? You just click the call phone link and enter any number or name from your address book.
Yep, and that can be just in the left-hand margin in your Gmail client where that chat is open. And right now it's only available to select invitees. And it's an interesting play that directly targets Skype.
Yeah, you know, Google bought the Gizmo 5 project a long time ago. They folded it in amongst them. And you can tell by looking at this thing that it's the same project.
Yeah.
I mean, they've rolled Gizmo 5 into Gmail.
And Gizmo 5 was a straight ripoff from Skype. And it was an open attempt at creating that. So this is a natural play for Google. But it's interesting. They're saying you can make free calls to landlines from this computer-based client to phones in the U.S. and Canada. So on Skype, you would have to Skype out and use your credits and actually pay for that. So that's limited time landline calling in the U.S. and Canada from the Gmail voice calling product. And
to sucker you in.
Sucker you in a little bit. It ties in with all your Google Voice properties. And I have a theory about this. I think what they're actually trying to do is what you'll do is you'll write an email and you'll eventually click on a button that says, send this via phone so I don't have to talk to another human being ever.
Well, you're going to do text-to-speech? Well, I hope they get better than their speech-to-text.
I know, it's terrible. It's not terrible, it's just...
They're going to call and say, I'd like to order a pizza, and it's going to say, please give me all your money.
You'll have the FBI knocking down your
door.
I
haven't gotten invited yet. Have you gotten invited?
I emailed my Google people and said, hook a sister up with some Gmail voice.
Oh,
access.
So you're jumping the line.
You know how I roll.
I'm happy just to wait to be invited like any normal person,
poor
Colleen.
Schlub. I think this is actually a really interesting play that will bring VoIP calling to more people. Skype has an IPO planned in the next few months, trying to raise $100 million in capital. Do you see this as an aggressive tactic that will influence that IPO?
I don't know if it influences the IPO at all because it's a different type of thing. I mean, remember when GChat came along and a lot of folks were like, oh, this is going to ruin Yahoo, is going to take on AIM. No, it didn't. And I think this is the same thing. It's a convenience. It's an interesting thing. I don't think as many people are going to take advantage of it as some people seem to think they are. But it's going to be a nice to have thing. I think the free calls is very smart on Google's part because it'll get more people to try it out than would have if they were charging a fee per call. But that's not going to last forever.
And given that Skype has had sort of an aimless wander in the desert period where eBay's been uncertain of what they were going to do with them, then they ditched them, and it's been an ugly marketing time period where it's hard to know what their plan is. And Google's making a direct marketing play. They even have little red phone booths that are popping up in airports to try and publicize this campaign. And they seem focused.
Yeah, I think they're serious about it, but I think there's room. I think, for instance, I don't see us switching our Skype here to GChat and using Google Video. Not anytime soon. I'm not saying it could never happen, but I think people who use Skype for VoIP, for phone service, are going to continue to do that. I don't think they're going to switch to Gmail, even though you can get a Google Voice number incoming and have it going out. I think Google Voice is going to have to, Let's put it this way. People didn't switch to Gizmo when Google acquired it. So this is just another way we can access Gizmo Project. And I think it will make it more popular, but I don't think it takes Skype down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This gives me warm, fuzzy memories of Dialpad.
I remember trying to use Dialpad.
Uh-huh.
What was it? Net to phone?
Net to phone. That was another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Apple is reportedly in talks to offer $1 TV show rentals. Right now, it's $1.99 to buy a regular TV episode, $2.99 for an HD version. They would allow rentals of TV shows for 99 cents rather than doing a subscription plan. And at the same time, Apple has sent an invite out to the media for an event on September 1st. But the invite shows a guitar.
An acoustic guitar with an apple in the center of it.
Did you get invited to this?
Yeah. I'm back on the Apple list after I was banned from iPhone 4 leakage coverage.
I didn't get invited, but that's okay. I never have.
They love you.
I don't want to break that streak.
Your consistency is impressive.
I wouldn't be able to go anyway.
Well, I won't be going because I'll be on vacation. But the I think the interesting thing here is that, number one, $1 rentals. I think there is a ton of pressure from competitors like Netflix, Hulu. Samsung, I think, is a real convergence player here because they're building internet connectivity into so many of their sets. And Apple's wondering how they're going to play in this space and if they need to provide a set-top box. So I think that the addition of $1 rentals, the rumor of Apple's iTV product coming out, and some of the speculation around this acoustic guitar with the apple in it is that it's unplugged. So the idea of media streaming unplugged.
So it's not, even though it looks like music, and we are going to have an iPod announcement. That's forgiven.
iPod,
this is the time
of
the year for the new iPod, right? We'll have a Retina display and all that stuff. Well, Apple Insider was passing along a Bloomberg report saying that Steve Jobs is not convinced the new version of the iTV will be a mainstream hit. And in any announcement, they would focus on the fact that you would be able to watch TV anywhere. So on your iPod, on your iPad, on your iPhone, that this new 99-cent rental thing would be billed as that. So maybe that's it. Unplugged. Watch your TV wherever you want to go instead of being tethered to your living room.
And I think this really is a Steve Jobs play here, trying to figure out what the strategy is. You know, one of his fundamental tenets about the business is that Apple is a hardware company. And iTunes being a subscription service or a rental company is a little departure. And I think he is uncomfortable with this. At the D8 conference earlier this year, he said the problem with getting into TV products is what he calls the go-to-market problem. Consumers don't want another set-top box. They don't want to pay for it because all the cable cos have already given us this model that we get it for free. And then he says nobody wants a stack of boxes, a table of remotes. And he says a cluster full of problems. And here's how he defines the issue from the D8 conference.
The only way that's ever going to change is if you can really go back to square one and tear up the set-top box and redesign it from scratch with a consistent UI across all these different functions and get it to the consumer in a way that they're willing to pay for it. And right now, there's no way to do that.
Unless you have the iOS on your iPod Touch and your iPad and your new iTV. So it's a consistent UI across all the... I see where he's going with that.
I think fundamentally the issue is there are no good universal remotes on the market. And if you can use your... I think where this may be a really fundamental development for the living room is if the tie together between iOS devices and the iTV means that my iPod Touch is a great remote and it actually works with all my products, that I'd like to see Apple attack the universal remote problem. Let's just put it that way.
Well, and I think you're right. The talk about the iPad and the iPod Touch being linked to an iTV could be part of this announcement. When I first saw this invite come across, I was like, oh, well, then there's not going to be any iTV. This is ridiculous. This is going to be a music announcement. It's going to be about the iPod Touch. It's going to be some sort of, you know, expansion on iTunes or something. Maybe we're going to see something about iTunes that we didn't hear about. But this whole unplugged thing is interesting because they may be just trying to throw you off the scent. Everyone overparses the imagery in these invites every time one comes out. And you know when we'll find out? September 1st at 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Let the rumors start. And I have to say, Mick the Rhino in the chat room says, all these things are dependent on all your products being Apple. So, yeah, and they're feeling the Google TV pressure, too. So bring on the Android-Apple battle for the living room.
Let's thank our sponsor, Gazelle, before we get to a few more stories. Gazelle is a way to get rid of your old, unwanted gadgets. You've upgraded, as I have, to a new phone. You got your old phone still lying around. I actually went online, put in my phone, the condition, all the cables that I had, got a quote, sent off for a box. They sent me a box. I put the phone in the box. I sent the box to them. They gave me an email today saying, yep, we got the box. We're looking through it. As soon as we've taken a look at it, we'll send you back your payment. It's that easy.
You spent a lot of words just describing one new verb. You gazelled it.
I totally gazelle. Don't just sell it.
I'm telling you, it's headed for the dictionary in one of those new words.
Gazelle helps you sell or recycle your smartphones, MP3 players, ebook readers, laptops, cameras, game consoles, GPS devices, whatever you got. They've got 20 product categories, over 200,000 unique items in their database. And even if they can't give you cash for it, they'll recycle it for you as well. If you just want somewhere that will responsibly take care of an electronic gadget so that it doesn't end up in some big pile of stuff overseas, talk to Gazelle. See much how much they'll give you for it. They'll take care of the shipping for it. It's very customer friendly. So try it out for a 5% bonus. That's right. You put in, you get your quote, and then use the code TNT. You'll get an extra 5%. I did that. I got another extra 5%. Mm-hmm. So don't just sell it. Gazelle it. Gazelle.com. Bonus code TNT. EA is caught in a controversy. They're not between anything, actually. What's going on is they've put out a new Medal of Honor game. This is a Medal of Honor reboot, and it takes place in Afghanistan. Now, a lot of folks have gotten very upset about the fact that the Taliban are playable in this game. So you can go into this game as the good guys, or you can go in this game as the Taliban, and you can be the Taliban and shoot and kill people. And a lot of folks are upset about that. But EA is standing firm. They say, we respect the media's views, but at the same time, don't compromise our creative vision and what we want to do. The development teams care very much about what they're building. And of course, a bit of criticism from the media causes some to get demoralized. But at the end of the day, we're proud of what we're doing. Bringing Medal of Honor back was no small feat.
Let me give you a point counterpoint from some of the players here. Fox News featured Gold Star mom Karen Meredith. And she says, we've just come off one of the worst months of casualties in the whole war. And this game is going to be released in October. So families are going to be burying their children, are going to be seeing this and playing this game. I don't see a video game based on a current war makes any sense at all. It's disrespectful. Then EA Games President Frank Gibeau says, if someone's the cop, someone's got to be the robber. In Medal of Honor multiplayer, somebody's got to be the Taliban. And then he says, at EA, we passionately believe games are an art form. And he likens it to Red Badge of Courage or the Hurt Locker, saying it's the media of the time, and that's how people tell their stories.
It's a really interesting debate going on. He also points out that they partnered on the game with the U.S. military and the Medal of Honor Society. So it's not like Grand Theft Auto. It's not where they're just kind of lightheartedly going in and making a controversial game and kind of exaggerating something for effect. And not that GTA is totally lighthearted, but it's definitely an exaggerated look at inner city crime. They're trying to say, look, we made a very serious game about a serious topic, and the fact that it's going on shouldn't prevent us from being able to express it in video game form. Whether video games are an art form is a big debate that's going on right now. Roger Ebert has gotten sucked up into that debate by saying they aren't, but then now he's kind of backtracked from that, saying, you know what, I shouldn't have said they aren't. It's, you know, I really don't know enough about video games to say whether they're art or not. But it's a huge debate.
Stoic in the chat room says, you know who's going to play this? Our troops overseas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, and this always happens with video games, and this is no exception. Playing something on a video game does not turn you into that thing. Mm-hmm. When you play Mario Brothers, you do not become a small Italian.
Well,
when you play Pac-Man, you don't become a yellow disc. When you play the Taliban, you don't become the Taliban. It's the suspension of disbelief in video game form. What we're getting used to as a species here is the idea that instead of watching, we're taking action. And that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and justifiably so. You don't need to buy the game. And honestly, that's how you vote on whether this is a good thing or not. And we're not even talking about selling to underage kids or anything here. We're talking about four adults.
Yeah. There's one problem in your logic, Tom, and that is that I did briefly turn into a small Italian man who jumps into large green pipes. It only happened once. I mean, it was brief, but...
You've always been a small Italian man to me, Eric.
This whole time, I didn't know. I just learned something about myself.
You know, Lanigan.
That's such a I'm so Italian. Yeah. Whatever.
So we'll keep an eye on that, but it seems like EA is sticking to their guns on this one, and it hits the PC, 360, and PS3 on October 12th, by the way, so we've got till then for someone to do something about it. The Consumers Union is getting excited about near-field communications. We've talked about this on the show a couple times, the idea that you would have an RFID chip or some sort of thing in your phone that would communicate and act as a payment service.
Not unlike the credit cards that you wave over the pad and it just, boop, takes your money.
This is the payment you're looking for.
It's a total Jedi mind trick for your money.
Don't say that, you'll get sued.
No, I don't want to get sued. I'm just kidding, Lucas. But I think that, you know, they make a really good point, which is there is not necessarily any clear federal law around how consumers will be protected. And so let's talk about this with regard to the existing credit card versus debit card account. So what if you tie your... phone payment system to your debit card? Well, this is what happens. Somebody gets a hold of that and you don't even know. You can be out for the entire amount that is stolen or fraudulently taken from your account because of the way the law works on debit cards. If someone steals your credit card or your debit card, you're responsible for $50 if you notify the issuer within 2 business days. That's
same goes for this.
Yeah.
If full of cash, which it always is.
Right.
If I lose it, I'm responsible for every dollar in there.
But that's why you don't carry 400 bucks in there. I mean, do you? Well, yeah, he's got 12.
I would assume I get paid enough to ever carry.
You got 1275 in there, and we all know it. But that's the point, is that when you use a credit card, your only liability is $50. With a debit card, 50 bucks if you notify in 2 days, 500 if you notify within 60 days. And after that, you're completely liable. So how do you know that someone's replicated your RFID chip in your phone? And the other thing is you got to fight to get the money back if you have it tied to your debit card, as opposed to a credit card where you just say, no, I'm not paying that.
And that's the point, is that it's tied. You know, I guess services could put in their own limits to this, mm-hmm. to say, like, hey, you know, well, you can use this, but you can have a maximum on it. So that would be the equivalent of limiting the amount of cash you're carrying around. But we don't know if people are going to put that in or not. The Consumers Union is saying it should just be the law. And I have to say, as much as I don't like the idea of having to put a law in place, it does seem to work pretty well in the credit card system.
I think what we've seen is credit card regulation.
So couldn't this fall under credit card regulation without adding anything new?
Well, but that's where the thing that's weird is you have to notify the bank that your debit card has been stolen or fraudulently replicated.
And this would be considered a debit card, I guess, huh?
If it's tied to your debit card.
Well, what if it's tied to a credit card then?
If it's tied to a credit card, you should have the same protection.
Then you get the same protection.
Right.
What are we worried about?
Because the new technology creates a harder mechanism for you to recognize that you've been fraudulent. Your card number is being used. It's not like you've lost the card.
I'm not sure I see it. If it's tied to something that has the same protections that we have now.
The debit card doesn't have that.
Well, but that's the problem with using a debit card now anyways. So what's the difference?
The point is, don't tie your phone to your debit card.
Okay.
And this should be a different law for phones, because replicating that information is easier given the technology.
I'm definitely with you on the first point.
We agree to disagree.
Let's take a look at the U.S. military. Pentagon Cyber Strategy Deputy Defense Secretary William J. Lynn III says malicious code was placed on a drive in 2008 by a foreign intelligence agency, uploaded itself onto a network run by the U.S. Military Central Command, and that code spread undetected on both classified and unclassified systems, establishing what amounted to a digital beachhead, from which data could be transferred to servers under foreign control. It sounds ominous. Sounds horrible. Why would they even admit this happened?
That's unclear. It was definitely an interesting release of information because the worm, it was called agent.btz, as you said, came in via flash drive. It was rumored to be Russian involvement, but what does Wired say the real source of the worm was?
Yeah, Wired has a story where they talked to some insiders who were like, yeah, we worked on this and didn't really look like it came from outside. What was the exact quote here?
Some guys
wanted to reach out and touch someone, but months later, we were still doing forensics. It was never clear, though. The code was used by Russian hackers before, but who knows? Left unsaid is, why would the intelligence agency launch a limp attack?
Not that. They did not use that word.
That's the words of Wired's Noah Schachtman. Mm-hmm. So the thing they're saying here is, if the Russians were behind this, it seems odd. It's the kind of thing that would happen more likely from someone putting an infected USB drive on a machine from inside and unknowingly infecting rather than being a foreign intelligence agent. So that takes us back to, why is William J. Lynn III saying that this is a foreign intelligence agent? Why is he writing about this in Foreign Affairs at all? And most people think it's because they're trying to create this awareness of the need to fund cyber defense. This has been going on for a few months now, where they keep coming up with these crazy scenarios. They did that cyber attack live on at CNN back in the spring. Mm-hmm. And so they've been trying to figure out how to push the idea that we could be under attack in cyberspace at any time. It could happen anywhere. And we need to really dig in and defend ourselves, which is probably true. Obviously, if this little worm could cause that much havoc, then, yeah, we needed a cyber command and we needed to put in place these kinds of protections and priorities.
What they're saying is, if we're vulnerable to a couple of guys sharing porn via a flash drive, we're seriously vulnerable to a foreign country attacking our systems.
We're also vulnerable to users who, according to Ars Technica, are still idiots.
That's kind of harsh.
This is a really interesting story. So researchers, where are these researchers from? They're publishing in the study, the Journal of Consumer Research. Researchers set up two survey web pages. One looked very official, had a Carnegie Mellon University seal, referred to a Carnegie Mellon University Executive Council survey on ethical behaviors. The other site featured Comic Sans heavily in the site design. It was called How Bad Are You? Letter U. Anyway, so
respondents were much more willing to give information up to the goofy Comic Sans.
Well, in a pretest, far more people rated the official Carnegie Mellon site as the safer option. But you're right. When they actually took the test, they gave up all the juicy stuff to the Comic Sans site.
And the thinking in this, as they analyzed the results, was that people lower their judgment when they're in a relaxed, casual environment, as opposed to being in a formal environment where they're assured that their security is being taken seriously. Then it's like that puts the flags up.
Yeah.
So I think this is fantastic research that a scammer would have to pay thousands of dollars to a consultant to figure out. And I think that this is just really useful for all you scammers out there.
Participants to use the How Bad Are You site admitted to unethical or embarrassing activities at a rate of 1.74 to 1.98 times that of those who were given the professional version. Because we feel uptight. But when we're doing the Comic Sans, Comic Sans.
Yeah, I slept with my secretary.
Whatever. I'll say anything on this site.
Come on.
It's all for fun. the authors of the study did recognize that, that it was limited to salacious facts that people are more likely to lie about. They'd clearly like to extend their work to information that's more directly related to security issues like passwords or PINs to see if it still held that people would divulge this kind of information if it wasn't. because my opinion is this, is when they were on the how bad are you side, it was like bragging. They're probably saying things that didn't happen.
Oh, interesting.
You know, but when they're on the Carnegie Mellon side, it's like, oh, it's buttoned down.
It really did.
You know, like some Carnegie Mellon professor is going to read this. I don't want
to. So maybe that's not helpful to scammers, because if you were on the how bad are you scam site, you would lie about your password and say, I don't care. It's actually all sevens.
Yeah, I don't think any of this like probably relates to passwords and pins that well, does it?
What is your password spelled U-R?
How bad is your password? Might be a good idea. New York Times has a story about digital devices taking away much-needed downtime from our brains. University of California, San Francisco scientists have found that when rats have a new experience, like exploring an unfamiliar area, their brains show new patterns of activity. But only when the rats take a break from their exploration do they process those patterns in a way that seems to create a persistent memory of the experience. And they suspect that this applies to us, too.
I think every person listening to this story can relate, just that if they don't have downtime after they have an intense period of stimulation, which is the same as learning, that you feel overload and you don't really process it. The study also said that people remembered more from a walk in a relaxed setting that's more wooded and rural, but when they went on a walk through an urban setting, which had more stimulation just by the nature of the environment, that they remembered less. So I think that everyone who's bombarding themselves with podcasts, oh gosh, you mean they shouldn't listen to us as they're driving to work or working out?
I think
kill this story right now.
I think there's something that I've hit on a while back, which is we have got to the point in our lives as a species where we have to schedule our downtime.
Mm.
Instead of being under this sort of, you know, working man's ethic of like, you know, if you got time to lean, you got time to clean, and let's fill every minute of our days. We actually have to put in time to say, like, you know what? I'm not going to do anything now. And it's not even about work. It's about like, oh, I should feel more productive. I should answer these emails. I should schedule that, you know, that haircut. I should make all this stuff happen. And the fact is, you will be faster at that if you build in some time to goof off.
Yeah.
People do that naturally. But then we do have all of these studies of how much work time is lost and how much money is wasted from people surfing the internet. They need that. They need that break.
Yeah. But even I think even surfing the internet, that's seeking behavior.
You know, we've
talked about this before. It's more information.
So the acquisition of more information in seeking feels relaxing.
It depends on what site you're at.
You might feel something beyond relaxation.
That's not what I'm talking about, Whirly.
You just turned red.
I mean, flash games or something, you know, where you're just like playing checkers or chess or something mindless, tic-tac-toe, where it's you're not really thinking. You're just letting the time pass away.
I'm still going to disagree with you. I think that the things that are really great for downtime, it depends on the kind of person you are. So I tell you what, I need to run. I need to mountain bike. I need to swim. And in those...
Do you listen to headphones when you do that?
I don't anymore.
Okay.
Because what I find is real revelations about life, work, ideas, my kids, they come to me out of nowhere in those times. And I don't know if it's that my body's moving or my brain is still because I'm focused on what I'm doing. That's when ideas come to me.
And we were talking about exercise, yeah.
We were talking about this at lunch with our CEO, and she was saying that the ideas come to her in the morning when she wakes up, because that's the only time that her brain has had to have a chance to process and relax. So yeah. I think a lot of people have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Whether you have built in time to veg out or not, you do want to keep up on your television shows. So we want to thank our sponsor, Slingbox, for making that possible wherever you are, your laptop or your mobile phone. Use it responsibly. But you can actually get your TV wherever you are, which this could actually save you time. Because instead of rushing home to get to the TV, you can actually watch stuff from your DVR on your laptop. When you get back home after a long trip, instead of ignoring your family and just watching television, you could have kept up on stuff over Slingbox, because it allows you to take your TV wherever you are, wherever you go, on your iPhone, on your BlackBerry. All you got to do is plug the box into the internet, plug it into your television. You can watch it wherever you have an internet connection. And it goes for everything you subscribe to. There's no limitations, no subscription fees, any of the same shows you watch on your TV at home, sports, news, movies, or any other program type. Check it out, Slingbox, at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com/twit.
Tom.
Yes,
it
Becky.
Is time for the news views.
Fantastic.
Attorneys general from 17 states sent a joint letter to Craigslist Tuesday demanding that the adult services section be removed from the site. The letter repeated the claim that Craigslist does not adequately screen ads in the section. Craigslist has responded to previous similar accusation that it works with law enforcement to pursue people who break the law by misusing the site.
Facebook has conquered India. ComScore figures show that Facebook now has 20.9 million users, passing Google's Orkut, which now has 19.9 million.
Will not replicate radio voice in this next story. The German government on Wednesday proposed new restrictions on employers' use of Facebook profiles when recruiting. This proposed law would let managers search publicly accessible information about applicants on the web and view their pages on job networking sites like LinkedIn, but would not allow hiring managers to use social networking sites like Facebook. Good luck policing that one.
Just in from Variety Magazine. The creators of the popular iOS game Angry Birds are shopping the concept around to toy makers and Hollywood execs hoping for spin-off merchandise on either a TV or movie deal.
Oh, man.
How do you like that, kids?
I hope they come out with some sort of like a Hungry Hippos game for Angry Birds by the time
Angry
my
Birds
kids are
movie?
Four.
That's got to be a kid's movie, right?
Angry Birds. The,
or an
the...
R-rated thriller.
No!
Gotta crush those pigs.
AMD unveiled details of two new microprocessor architectures, Bulldozer for high-performance PCs and server markets, and Bobcat for low-power notebook and small form factor desktop markets. These are AMD's first new from-the-ground-up designs since the original Opteron and mark the biggest departure from existing hardware since AMD introduced the K7 in 099.
Cisco predicts that streaming video, including 3D content, is expected to more than quadruple bandwidth demands by 2014. CEO John Chambers also predicts that in 10 years, holograms over IP will become commonplace. Apparently, Verizon has been conducting experiments with holograms over their Fios network.
Microsoft's Internet Explorer 9 is starting to hit the rumor mill. An image from Russia, of all places, has surfaced showing what the new browser might look like. The beta comes out September 15th with a bunch of features trying to make it a more competitive browser. And the Russian source also says IE9 will have tear-out tabs that work like the arrow snap feature in Windows 7, putting two windows, Tom, side by side.
Innovative. As innovative as a new Commodore 64, which will be available by Christmas, according to Commodore USA, the new model will be called the Commodore PC-64 and be an all-in-one computer housed in an exact replica of the original Commodore 64's case. New PC-64 sports a dual-core Intel Atom D525 CPU with NVIDIA Ion 2 graphics, 4 gigs of DDR3 memory, 1 terabyte hard drive, DVD CD optical drive, and integrated 802.11n Wi-Fi with a 6-in-1 media card reader. No reports on whether it will be able to play console cartridge games.
You're so excited.
I would like to buy one, yes.
Do you think this is considered a mod, even though it comes from a manufacturer?
It's sort of a... Well, no, because they're making these from scratch. They're making these cases from scratch, so it's not a mod.
Oh, it's cool, though.
You could mod your own C64 to make it a PC64 on your own, though. That would be cool.
Best modder story at Tech TV that we ever did was a guy who shoved an entire computer into a Millennium Falcon.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy was such a nerd that over his couch, instead of having a painting, he had a huge whiteboard in the living room of his house.
Yeah, exactly. How else are you going to be able to, you know, keep track of your mod?
Hello?
Get some painting up there. That's useless.
Duh.
All right, our final story today, thanks to Barber B on Twitter for sending this along. The robots have started probing our defenses. Navy operators lost control of an unmanned aircraft earlier this month and were unable to regain control before the aircraft entered restricted airspace at ground Washington, D.C.
UAVs with minds of their own.
According to a Navy statement, this is on NavyTimes.com, by the way, the incident took place August 2nd. The aircraft flew about 23 miles on a north by northwest course, entered the National Capital Region restricted airspace. Incursions into the airspace are actually fairly common, but it's usually human pilots, not robot pilots. Navy operators shifted to another ground control station, Fire Scout, which is the name of the program. Fire Scout program manager Captain Tim Dunigan restored the control link with the aircraft, which was commanded to return to Webster Field in southern Maryland.
So corroborating your story that the military is letting out information that we are under cyber attack, and we need to fund our defenses. We also need to fund our defenses against our own rogue robots.
Do you think the person who was operating the ground control station that went bad was you know, sitting there punching the button, and there's, "Lieutenant, I said, turn it around. It's not responding, sir."
It's a Lifetime movie waiting to happen.
Totally. They've actually suspended the program while they investigate what happened with the software. Dunigan says they're in the final stages of the investigation and plan on briefing leadership next week. We anticipate resuming flight operations in early September.
Time for the calendar. Big news today. The third-gen Kindle is selling at record rates. They are shipping a little bit early, a couple
days
early.
Yeah, they started shipping today. They're not supposed to ship till Friday.
No, they're
happy early get your Kindle day.
Yeah. And they're saying, the folks at Amazon saying that customers ordered more Kindles on Amazon.com and Amazon.co.uk combined than any other product.
That's always true. The Kindle always outsells every other product.
I can't believe it outsells diapers, because I buy a lot of diapers and I don't buy a lot of Kindles.
Do you buy them in large boxes?
True.
That only counts as one unit.
Oh.
Yeah. That's how they do it. If they had to count each individual diaper, you kidding me?
Don't smartass me,
down at the bottom of the list.
Don't make me reach right over there and smack that bearded face.
It's true.
What else is on the calendar today? Well, let me tell you, a big story that will probably be in the news tomorrow, the mainstream news, is that WikiLeaks has released another very high-level document, and this one from the CIA.
Yes, this document is a three-page report from February that evaluates the participation of U.S.-based individuals in terrorism. A memo cites several cases of alleged terrorist acts by U.S. residents. So it's not a technological paper. It's not even an Afghani-related paper. This comes from somewhere else.
Right. Finally, we will be having some meetup action at the Dragon Con.
Oh, yeah. Our schedule is going to be in tatters for the next 2 weeks. Because, first of all, Becky's going on vacation tomorrow.
Yeah.
So no Becky for a week and a half. And then I head out to Dragon Con on Thursday, September 2nd. So I'll be from Atlanta on Thursday and Friday. And then on Saturday, we're doing our meetup. Saturday, September 4th, we're doing our meetup at 6 p.m. at the Sundial Restaurant in Atlanta. You don't have to be going to Dragon Con to come to the meetup. You can just come on down anyway. We just happen to be in Atlanta for Dragon Con. Mm-hmm. Don't forget also that NSFW will be doing a live show on Friday evening at Dragon Con. And Sword and Laser, that I do with Veronica, will be doing a live show on Sunday at Dragon Con.
By the way, she put up on Twitter that you butt-dialed her today.
I didn't butt-dial her. You know what's funny is I was listening to a podcast, and then I started trimming my beard. And so I stopped the podcast and put the phone down and somehow accidentally, like, dialed Veronica. And so I'm hear this like voice. I'm like, did the podcast not stop? And then I finally finish it. I pick it up and I see it's like calling Veronica Belmont. And I was
so
like,
Ace Detects Beard calls at Veronica.
Yes, exactly. Right. I beard dialed her.
I'm so glad we got that clarified.
Title. All right, let's move on to the voicemail. We got a call from someone who's using Google Voice already to send us a voicemail from their Gmail chat.
Hey guys, this is Ken from Petaluma. I'm just calling in, calling out from my phone via Gmail. Keep up the good work. I love the show. Shh, I'm trying to call.
Oh, that was Ken, our director of engineering.
That doesn't count. We were all in the same room.
Yeah, we didn't know what. We just thought he was being rude, making a call. So you hear us shouting in the background.
That's a bunch of hooey.
We're just trying to prep for the show. Sorry, Ken, our mistake. Thanks for calling the show, though.
Yeah. We also got a call from another person who this time chose to remain anonymous. It was not someone we knew. And he actually had a really interesting point about the story we've covered a lot, iTunes accounts getting hacked. And he was a victim.
Hi, TNT crew. About your news about the people on PayPal and iTunes getting hacked. I'm one of the victims of that. I got cleaned out for close to $4,000. Thankfully, I've got most of that money back now and should be getting the rest pretty soon. But in terms of a phishing scam, I can't find any emails that I have received. There would be anything about validating account. I linked my PayPal and iTunes account probably 4 or 5 years ago. Haven't used it really since. So I try to keep up with changing passwords or listen to Security Now. I can't find anything in my email that would be related to a phishing scam. So I probably haven't changed the password in a while, and that's probably my fault there. But the fact that so many people got it at the same time makes me wonder, maybe there was an exploit. Don't know who's at fault, but thought you guys like to know that.
All right, yeah, interesting story. Thanks for calling with that. There are other ways they could have got a hold without there being an exploit in either iTunes or PayPal. And I'm not saying that this is your situation, but if you happen to use the same password with the same email address at other services, they might have hacked it. The Guardian had a very interesting article trying to go into like the different ways that you could have this happen to 400 or more people without there actually being any exploit. So if you use the same password and login for iTunes and PayPal and then like some stupid service that you signed up one time, somebody happens to hack that service that keeps their passwords in clear text and they just start trying it out at a bunch of different places. But that might not be it either. There are all kinds of other ways people might have been able to hack in, and there might be an exploit.
I have three quick takeaways on this. One, I think this is an ongoing story that we haven't heard the end of yet, and that this may be more complicated than we think it is. Two, I think it goes back to our point about credit card versus debit card. And your PayPal account, if that's tied into a debit card or directly into a pull-off of your bank, that makes me uncomfortable. I would much rather have that be credit card-based, because then you have the protections of the credit card company. And the third thing, I can't remember it at all.
Yeah. Well, the third thing is you can't remember all those passwords because it's hard to remember things.
That was it. Thank you so much. I always go for a tiered password scenario, so that you have one password for your very, very money, financial-oriented passwords, one that's less secure for email and such, and then a total bozo password for the accounts where it doesn't matter.
Gotcha.
Phew. Pulled that one out.
Let's move on to the emails to tnt@twit.tv. Scott from North Carolina says, great show. About the cable TV declines, the changeover from analog to digital over-the-air TV may have had an effect. Local TV stations now have multiple channels with weather, movie, and classic TV programming, and the local PBS station has a kids channel. Over-the-air may be old school, but it's priced right, free.
Yep. And that may absolutely influence the decline.
That's the thing, is these declines usually happen for a number of reasons. And so it may be a little bit of people watching on the internet. It may be a little bit of the economy. It may be a little bit of the digital TV transition, where folks were like, you know what? It had the opposite effect that the cable companies wanted, which is get everyone on cable because they don't want to have to buy a converter box. Maybe they just said, forget it.
If it had happened in a traditional economy, I think that it would have had what the effect that the cable companies wanted, but because it happened during an economic downturn, I think people were much more savvy about saving money.
Yeah.
Next email is in response to the story that we did about getting targeted ads in Facebook. And this woman had written in and said that she had talked about Harry Potter, she talked about nuns, and then later that day she got an email for men who
Catholic men who like Harry Potter. We wanted to know if she clicked on the ad.
I got a kick out of hearing my email read over the air, and I'm delighted you all had so much fun with it. I've gotten a lot of mileage out of it myself. I'm a playwright in New York City. I did not click on the ad because I used to work for a text message company, UPOC, that had a dating component and was one of the people paid to flirt with others on the site.
Oh, no.
So they would think there were people interested and text more and produce more revenue for the company. I've heard of this before. The fake winkers on, someone was telling me about it. I don't know which site it was, but like winking is like, I'm interested in you on one of the dating sites.
Oh, really?
And they thought that it was totally fake people being paid to wink.
It's like, it's the old classic, you know, the woman in the bar sits down and asks you to buy her a drink. They're just trying to shill for drinks.
Hey, well, kind of, but it's weirder when she's being paid by the man. Being the web company.
Oh, paid by the web company. Well, those girls are being paid by the bar.
I'm so confused. Which girls? I understand. Yes, your point. But
I see this is a thing in The Wire.
Oh, yeah. Just started watching that. Are you watching that now too?
Oh, I just finished watching all five seasons.
Oh my God, I've gotten five episodes out.
I gorged on it.
That is the difference between man with two dogs and man and woman with two children.
Kids. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching Tech News Today. Wish Becky a happy vacation.
I'll miss you.
tnt@twit.tv is the email address. twit.tv/TNT is the website where you can find all our show notes. And 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. Give us a call. We'll see you next time.